Ever wonder what psychologist moms talk about when we get together? Whether we're consulting one another about a challenging case or one of our own kids, or just leaning on each other when parenting feels hard, because trust me, even when we do this for a living, it's still hard. Joining me each week in these special Thursday shows are two of my closest friends, both moms, both psychologists. They're the people I call when I need a sounding board. These are our unfiltered answers to your parenting questions. We're letting you in on the conversations the three of us usually have behind closed doors. This is Securely Attached, Beyond the Sessions. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Beyond the Sessions segment here on the Securely Attached podcast. I have Dr. Rebecca Hirschberg.
Hello.
And she is the perfect person to talk about this question because you literally wrote the book.
I wrote the book every day, as Elvis Costello would say.
Yes. So first of all, hi. It's so good to see you again.
Always.
But this parent writes in, hi, by what age should kids stop tantruming? What are some abnormal indicators to look for and what should I advocate for in terms of testing and support? Thank you.
Boom. I mean, I can sort of start by saying what I say to every single parent who asks me that question, which is, when was the last time you had a tantrum? Because mine was probably sometime last week. I think, you know, a tantrum is the way I define a tantrum in the book and kind of generally is it's a behavioral expression of emotions that kind of feel too big to express in words or in another adaptive way. And as we get older, we get better at using our words, we get better at having coping strategies, and we don't necessarily have a full-on tantrum. But I think we can all point to adults who have tantrums, and they just look different at different developmental stages. And I think that context is important. As far as the kind of tantrum that I would imagine this parent is talking about, I think typically, quote unquote, you know, what we're thinking about as a kind of a run of the mill, you know, generic quote unquote tantrum. Tend to start around one, maybe a little before, you know, with the understanding these are all averages, and tend to kind of peter out usually by six or seven, with a peak being four, five-ish, well, three, four-ish, I would say actually. Yeah. And when I say one of my most popular social media posts is when I say, you know, don't panic if your 8-year-old still has tantrums, right? Because, like, but I thought you said seven. When kids are overwhelmed with big feelings, and obviously there's a million things that can play into that, and there's neurodiversity, and there's language, and there's, you know, there's all kinds of things. But tantrums are kind of overwhelm or meltdowns. And there's a lot out there right now that tries to separate them out. Kind of what's the difference between a meltdown and a tantrum and an overwhelm. And I don't know that that's useful. Like, tantrums are big feelings that your kid can't really handle in the moment that manifest in behaviors that as a parent are really difficult to tolerate and manage. And absolutely, hopefully they get less frequent as kids get older because they gain more language skills and abilities to carry themselves, express themselves, cope. And looking for a specific age that they, you know, kind of completely wrap up is not, I think, helpful or realistic.
Right. Well, that's the thing I keep in my head going back to is like, when we say what age should they stop tantruming, I really think the more accurate question, like a more nuanced question is, at what age do I expect my child to stop tantruming at a particular frequency, intensity, and duration, right? Because we never stop having moments where we lose it, right? But younger kids in that kind of window that you'd sort of listed, right? Like late ones to like late sixes or sevens, you're going to see them more frequently. You're going to see them last longer and be more intense, depending on your kids. Some kids have a lot, they have different styles with how they tantrum, right? Some kids, it's like, it comes on super fast. It's super intense. It's super short. And then they move on. Some kids, it's like this rolling boil that eventually hits, and then it lasts for a really long time, takes them a long time to like kind of come move through it and get back to themselves. For some kids, the intensity is huge and acute. And for some kids, it's like a whiny, icky, eh, and then they're done, right? So,
I think parents oftentimes want, I certainly get in my office a lot, what's normal, right? What's right. normal and what's not normal. And I wish there was a formula when we look at frequency, duration, and intensity, which I agree are absolutely the hallmarks to look at. I wish I could say, well, there have to be within this number of tantrums a week, and they can't last more than this amount of time, and they need to be this level of intensity, and then you're okay. But if you cross over one of those numbers, there's something to be concerned about. And unfortunately, there's no algorithm, right? You told me your child had one tantrum last week, and it lasted 90 minutes, and they tore apart furniture, and they bit their skin, and they, you know, that's one really concerning tantrum.
Right.
If you told me your child had, you know, 32-minute tantrums, I would be less, you know, like it's just, you know, but if like there's no, for me, there's absolutely things that I look at.
Yeah.
And there are some red flags that parents should be aware of, and we can talk about those. But as far as the duration, frequency, and intensity thing, I think it's hard to kind of pin down exactly where
right.
quote unquote normal stops and concerning begins.
And that brings up an important rule of thumb that I kind of use when I'm talking with parents, kind of about anything, when they're asking me like, what's normal, what's not normal, regardless, is think about it in terms of like, you know, when you go to the pediatrician and they take your child's weight and height and head circumference, and then they chart it on that growth curve. And every single time they come back in that office, they do those same three measurements and they plot it against their own growth curve, right? They're comparing your child to your child, right? Think of that same concept when you're looking at behavioral issues or regulation issues. Are you comparing your child's frequency, duration, and intensity of their tantrums to their own frequency, intensity, and duration of tantrums, right? That's a big thing for me, right? If my child falls off their growth curve or flies up and jumps really high over their growth curve, expected growth curve, that's a sign like, a big change has occurred. Something isn't kind of going the way we expected, right? If I have a kid who's really moody and irritable and like has a sensitive nervous system and has a lot of tantrums, and they always have, doesn't mean they always will, but I would expect to see them with a relatively consistent level, maybe hopefully slightly tapering, but still like consistent with their temperament and personality and coping strategies and age, right? But as they get a little older, would I expect them to show fewer? Perhaps, but is that fewer than, you know, Mary Jo, who's sitting next to them in their kindergarten class? Probably not, right? Like I'm looking at like, is my child getting slightly, are they showing a reduction in intensity, duration, and frequency overall in the aggregate as they get a little bit older and have the capacity to like problem solve differently, regulate affect differently, communicate their needs differently, and tolerate distress differently? That's what I'd want to see, right? But if my child's increasing in any of those, you know, measures from where they previously were, I'd want to try to figure, it sounds to me that that kid is experiencing increased stress, right? Something is stress. And I don't necessarily mean like, you know, stress can be lots of different things. It could be a sign that they're getting sick, or it could be a sign that something's not feeling good at school, or it could be a sign that something's happening in like the home environment, whatever, but some type of stress on the system that's making it go up in one of those domains or multiple of those domains, like frequency, duration, and intensity. It wouldn't necessarily be a sign like, oh gosh, something's really wrong. It just says to me like, hey, what I would want to kind of do a deep dive on like what could be stressing their system right now. But I want to compare a child to themselves, right? To their sort of like regulation curve.
Yeah, no, I think that's I haven't heard that before, and I think that's a really great analogy to the growth curve. You know, I encourage parents when I'm talking about frequency, duration, and intensity to actually
like monitor, or I shouldn't say monitor, but record, not with the, I'm dating myself, not with a tape recorder, but like keep track of, there we go.
Yeah. To track.
And especially something like duration, right? Because when you are in it, it's the same thing with parents who choose to, you know, do sleep learning with their child. And you're like, they were crying for 2 hours. And it's like, you look at a clock and it's been 7 minutes.
You know? Right. And it feels like 2 hours.
So long, or it feels like, you know, your child's average tantrum is just incredibly difficult and intense because you remember that time at the airport when blah, blah, blah. But mm-hmm. the fact is that was that time at the airport, you know? And so really, you know, if you start to feel like, oh my gosh, my child's not getting better, my child's getting worse, you know, to really take a step back and start logging it for those three variables, because you might be surprised at what actually comes through.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. In fact, when I work with families, I have like this observation tracker form that I have them use. In fact, I think I can like link that in the show notes.
Is that from Mona Delahook's book or no?
No, I love her stuff too. Mona Delahook has a book called Beyond Behaviors, and then another one that's called Brain Body Parenting. Yeah. And she talks a lot about this as well. But she has a different, like, she talks, I think, a little bit more about like tracking their sensory stuff, and like the observation tracker that I have parents use is way more rudimentary. It's super basic. It's kind of like a food tracker or a mood tracker. You know, it's like time of day. What did you observe happen? What was your response? What were some of the like antecedents and consequences that like you could maybe identify afterwards and looking backwards, and then any other notes. But my thought is like, I really want parents to start paying attention and actually logging throughout the day how what's happening. But one, to your point, to get a realistic sense, because we have a distorted sense very often of like what's actually going on, because it's so overwhelming when it's happening. But the other reason why I always want parents to sort of, for like a week, not forever, but just for like a week, really track, is because I want to look for patterns. I want to know, like, is it always happening at certain times of the day? Is it always happening around certain types of transitions? Is it always happening with a certain parent, or, you know, not the other parent, or when a sibling's present, or whatever? But I'm looking for patterns, because I think those patterns help us understand that other question I was asking, which is what might be stressing the system. Even if there aren't like major changes in your child's tantrums, but you're just trying to figure out like, okay, how do I help them build those tools to reduce them? You kind of have to figure out, well, what tools are missing? And so knowing what's triggering it.
Complicated result of it. I mean, I would actually say not to negate the fact that you might see like, okay, it's every time in the late afternoon. It looks like there's a long time between lunch and dinner. What if we move dinner up a little bit and suddenly your kid's throwing fewer I mean, you can actually come up with some
exactly
really concrete, like, you don't need to have a PhD to figure out, you know, like,
right. What? But you do need to like actually map it, because it's hard to see it when you're in it. You kind of need to look at it on paper. That's why I always start with the observation mm-hmm. tracker. There's an episode that I did a while back. I'll have to link to it in the show notes, but it was like how to change your child's behavior in 3 weeks or something like that. And it was a little tongue in cheek, because as anyone who's listening to this podcast knows, like, I'm not a big fan of like focusing specifically on changing a child's behavior. However, I do walk you through kind of how to identify a behavior that's not working and how to work to change it. How you change it is to track the behaviors and figure out how you're showing up and kind of shift the way you're showing up. And it's a really helpful strategy. And I'll link to it, because if you're listening to this podcast episode because your kid's having a lot of tantrums, this might be a helpful way to like think about it. But also, like we were talking earlier, Rebecca, about red flags. Like, I almost feel like we could talk about, I mean, you and I, God, we love tantrums. It's like our love language. I know. But so we probably could do like a lot more episodes on this, which I'd be happy to at any point ever to do this. But like, I think we can talk about sort of what's normative, which we sort of did. We talk about ways you can try to really get kind of objective data on what's going on, right? And then I do think we can talk about what you can do to build your child's skill set, but that's a probably longer episode. But I do think we should talk about red flags, because like you were saying, like signs that something is like, this is not just about a regular, like developmental regulation building, right? It's something else.
Right. And, and teams are typical and expected unless they're not. And how do you tell the difference? And every parent will say, no, you've never seen a kid tantrum like my kid tantrums. And there are actually, you know, that's not true. Most kids tantrum, and yet there are signs. Not when we say red flag, I just want to be clear, not that it's a 5-alarm fire and that there's anything really horrifically wrong, but just that it would be helpful perhaps to get a set of eyes on your kid or to speak with a professional who knows more about this kind of thing. One is that's been borne out in the research is duration. Mm-hmm. So if your child is regularly having tantrums that are, I think, upwards, if I'm remembering correctly, and don't cite me on this, but upwards, and the citations are in my book, I think, but upwards of like 25 minutes regularly, I think is something to be aware of. If your child is having tantrums regularly in a setting outside of their home or with their caregivers, if your child is engaging in aggression to themselves or other people, and again, that's why these red flags are so dicey, because I can picture parents listening and being like, oh man, my kid hits all the time or my kid pushes all the time. This is like, it's just a qualitatively different kind of aggression. Your child is scratching his own arm really hard, you know,
biting themselves or bite, like
destroying something really deliberately and purposefully. That's a
pulling their hair out. I've seen that, you know.
I think. And then the last is not being able to soothe themselves without sort of extensive assistance. And again, not what, like, it's appropriate for a 2-year-old having a tantrum that they may need a parent to come and hug them and help calm them down and co-regulate sometimes. But the idea that every time they're distressed, they cannot kind of get themselves back into regulation without some kind of extensive intervention from a grown-up. I've seen plenty of kids who get into a rut, though, where it, not by their own volition, but where they actually could, but a parent is so anxious that doesn't let that, you know. So each of these red flags, I just want to really caution parents from taking at face value, because even though we're trying to list them as like things to be aware of, it's also like you actually need someone who can potentially like ask the more further probing questions to really get at, is this what the researchers meant when they
right. came? I think what we're saying is if those things are happening, worth exploring some sort of like professional evaluation, not so that you can then get extensive treatment for your child who is very much for sure definitely having an issue that needs help, but maybe for them to be able to get into the more like specific nuanced questions of like, okay, how do I really ask this very unique family, this very unique set of parents and this very unique child, like how do we really discern whether this is something that is a sign that something is more complicated going on, or perhaps, nope, this is still developmentally appropriate. This is your child's growth curve, if you will. And maybe there's some strategies that we could do to support it, but also you don't need to freak out. Right. And frankly, even if they say this is a big problem, this probably suggests some underlying issue, also not a we need to freak out moment, right? Like we treat this in our practices all the time. And with, you know, relative easy success. Like, I think this is solvable. It's not, and some of the solving it is increasing parents' tolerance for it. Some of it is modifying the environment to create less stressors on the system of the child. Some of it is waiting out the child's developmental sort of growth so that they can withstand the distress in a different way. And some of it is giving the child strategies and different tools that are really targeted to help them. I mean, these are things that like you and I do literally every single day with families, and it's quite painless, you know, like it can be a pretty helpful experience.
Yeah, it's cool because you can see, it's like, how rare is it in parenting that I can say, which I can confidently about tantrums, like, do these things and I promise it will get easier. You know, like, that's a win. And it's a win for parents who are like, wow, look at what we did. And so embrace it and learn about it and think, I mean, yeah, all that. Let's do another episode on.
Yeah. Oh my God. Please send us your tantrum questions and Rebecca and I will come back and answer them specifically because I don't know, tantrums, I feel like I've done so many episodes on tantrums and they're all really different because tantrums are like ubiquitous in that they're in everybody's family and every child. And also there's a lot of nuance to it.
Yep.
Absolutely. We can geek out on tantrums anytime.
I look forward to it.
You, me too. All right. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much for listening. As you can hear, parenting is not one size fits all. It's nuanced and it's complicated. So I really hope that this series where we're answering your questions really helps you to cut through some of the noise and find out what works best for you and your unique child. If you have a burning parenting question, something you're struggling to navigate, or a topic you really want us to shed light on or share research about, we want to know. Go to drsarahbrennan.com/question to send in anything that you want Rebecca, Emily, and me to answer in Securely Attached Beyond the Sessions. That's drsarahbrennan.com/question. And check back for a brand new Securely Attached next Tuesday. And until then, don't be a stranger.